Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to all 32 around the NFL, but it's that time of the week where we check in on your fantasy football teams. Maybe you're still alive in guillotine. We know our producer, Drew, was chopped last week, so he's not around. Cody's a little nervous this week. Paul Charchin of GuillotineLeagues.com joins us thanks to Twin Peaks, Eats, Drink, Scenic Views. Charch, good to have you on again, but yeah, we lost a member of our show in guillotine.
Yeah, I don't sense that you're really torn up about it.
No, we don't feel bad. Because if he didn't get chopped, it was going to be me, Charge.
Oh, did you have the near-death experience?
Yeah, yeah. On a 49-point performance, I had Josh Allen.
Oh,
I'd already lost CMC. I lost Isaiah Pacheco, so I was going to die, and it was him instead.
Wow. So now did you have to spend big this week to make up for the loss of those? I mean, your number one and two runners are dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Welcome to the team, Jamar Chase.
Yeah, you had to do something. You had to make a big move. How much did Jamar Chase cost you?
$360, something like that.
Well, yeah, you paid a premium. But look, you know, I don't blame you. You were probably, you know, there was a high likelihood this would have been your last week if you didn't make a big move. So, and I like that move, by the way. And this is a team in Cincinnati that's going to get a lot better. You can tell Joe Burrow improved incrementally last week. Also, you get Jamar Chase knocking some rust off. T. Higgins could come back as early as this week. So, yeah, you just feel like that offense is going to start to click here. I got two Kansas City items for you. You ready?
Let's do it.
Normally, you pepper me with questions. I'm peppering you with topics today. Number one, your team has allowed the most tight end receptions through two games since the database goes back to 1999, and no team has allowed more tight end receptions than your squad going back 25 years.
That's right. Yeah, we've been talking about it. You know, it's definitely a problem for this team. But what's funny about this week is we know they've faced Kyle Pitts. And, you know, I still think he's one of the most overrated players in the NFL, especially in the fantasy world of what people think he actually is. So he's either going to continue that or this will be the week where he ends up having 35 yards.
Exactly, which he does all the time. You know, there have been so many times when your Kyle Pitts are like, oh, this is the week. It's all the stars are aligning. Now, in theory, the Chiefs know that they're getting murdered by tight ends, and, you know, they would do something to fix that. But we've seen teams struggle with tight ends all season long, where just schematically they don't, where they just roster-wise, they don't have the right player. So it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. All right, here's item number two for you.
Okay.
Because this show asks the questions that the mainstream media is too afraid to ask. Where's Crocky J?
Okay, so.
Crocky J, of course. And now, let me explain why I'm worried about him. Crocky J, of course, is Carson Steele's pet alligator. Your listeners know better than most. And Steele, you're an undrafted free agent. You sign with randomly Kansas City, and you probably go to Kansas City thinking you have a 1% chance of making the roster. So do you buy a bunch of swampy acreage in Missouri? Of course not. You are living in an apartment somewhere in Kansas City. So where's Crocky J? Is he in the apartment pool? Is he in the tub? Did you throw him in Patrick Mahomes' yard? Is he nipping at Patrick's kids? That's the question that's the real question that your listeners want the answers to.
So Mahomes' house does definitely have like a man-made lake on it, essentially. So no reason why it couldn't live there. Bad news. Even though Missouri is the wild west of animals, as in you can pretty much own anything here just as long as it's already here, transporting them across state lines comes with some licensing issues. Crocky J's never even made it to Kansas City. He's back home. That might be why Carson... I know. His pet alligator is being watched by his parents.
That's... Okay. A, number one, we need a Smokey and the Bandit style with getting Crocky J across state lines. So I want to see that. And then number two is he, how much of a pet really is Crocky J? I mean, Cody, you seem like a cat guy. If you moved, wouldn't you take your cats with you?
I mean, yes. That feels like an insult, but yes. But at the same time, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't think my parents would have ever let me have a crocodile. Like, I just can't imagine that was, or an alligator. I don't think it's ever on the table.
Yeah. Interesting that Crocky J is an alligator, by the way. But, you know, Allie J doesn't have the same ring to it as Crocky J.
It doesn't. Yeah, Cody's not childless, even though he has had cats before. Anyway, we're talking to Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com. What about injuries? We know Tua is out. How much do you downgrade Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle because of Skylar Thompson now being the quarterback?
Now, we've seen five games of Skylar Thompson because he's had to come into a lot of games because he's gotten knocked out of a lot of games. And we've seen five games in which Skylar Thompson has thrown 10 or more passes. So it's not a huge sample size, but it gives us a little basis for understanding. Tyreek Hill drops down on average in those five games to wide receiver 32. Waddle drops down to wide receiver 41. Now, typically in those games, Skylar Thompson is coming off the bench cold, right, replacing Tua, who just got hurt. Now, Thompson gets a full week of reps. Mike McDaniel can craft a game plan around him. And we've seen enough of Skylar to know that he's non-awful. Non-awful. You know, a big arm, low accuracy. He can still connect on those signature long passes to Tyreek Hill, or just like bubble screen to Tyreek Hill and just go let him be special. So for me, Tyreek Hill drops is still a mandatory starter. He drops from a wide receiver one to a wide receiver two. Waddle, though, goes from traditionally like a wide receiver two down to a flex level where you might have some other players where you could start over him.
Speaking of mandatory starts, are we there now with Marvin Harrison Jr. after one big game and Malik Nabers? Because it started kind of slow, and I think people were a little worried after 1 week, but week two would certainly make it look like they're top 15 guys.
Yeah, I think they are. What we saw was so compelling out of Harrison last week that I don't know how do you walk away from that and just leave him on your bench, right? Harrison's my number seven wideout this week, ahead of stalwarts like, you know, Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And then Nabers, just the usage is so high. They're not throwing a meaningful number of passes to anybody else. Nabers looks like that whole passing offense goes from him. He's my wide receiver 14 this week, so it's game on for those guys as far as I'm concerned.
So anybody listening out there that drafted an Adam Thielen for some reason or a Deontay Johnson, God bless you.
Yeah.
Now, is there a chance you might get some production with Andy Dalton being the starter?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is, well, no, it's Andy Dalton, but I'm the guy who's going to try to make a case here, okay? Tell me if you think this works. Dalton had one start last year. He threw 58 passes, rolled up 361 yards, and had two touchdowns. The Raiders are favored by 7. I think it's the biggest spread of the week. The game script is likely to be pass-heavy again. And you've got your head coach, Dave Canales, who could not fix Bryce Young through two games. But Dalton fits his model. You know, Canales revitalizes veteran quarterbacks who other teams had given up on. Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith. This feels like a good combination for Dalton. And I think Deontay Johnson and even Adam Thielen are flex-worthy dart throws, if only for garbage time pass statting. In that one game last year that Dalton started, he supported with big games Adam Thielen and DJ Chark, who was on the team then. That was his 1 and 2 then. And the Raiders are ranked 29th in pass coverage. So I think the stars align here to give you one more crack at the receivers for Carolina in this game. Probably a blowout and probably a game script that helps them.
I'm going to hope that it's Chuba. It's the only Carolina Panther I own amongst four fantasy football teams, and I'm going to have to hope that maybe he's the guy.
Yeah, that's probably smart.
When you look at what when it's an unknown going into a fantasy thing, you mentioned Crocky J, so you mentioned Carson Steele. How do you handle the situation where you're like, well, I don't know what they are. Maybe this is the only one where Carson Steele is the full-time starter, and a week from now or 2 weeks from now, he's in a timeshare with Kareem Hunt. But having never watched him in a start alone and only seeing 7 carries from him last week, how do you handle guys like that? Or let's say a Rams wide receiver chart where you're like, well, the passes have to go somewhere. Do you just start Tyler Johnson? Just start Carson Steele? How do you handle it when it's like a big unknown of production?
Let's start with your team and your game. The spineless answer, which we don't do on this show, is to say, well, let's just wait and see. You know, let's take a week. You know, okay. That's, you know, and in a guillotine league, I guess where one dud game can end your season, I suppose I would adopt the form of a jellyfish, and I would give the spineless answer. But in a standard league, I'm rolling the dice on Samaje Perine in PPR leagues where we get a point per reception because he's a proven veteran, and coaches often tend to lean towards their veterans in times of tumult. We know Samaje Perine can catch, and maybe Carson Steele can catch too. I don't know. Maybe he's the second coming of LaDainian Tomlinson, but Steele's only run 6 NFL routes in his entire life. You know, Pacheco was catching a lot of passes. You'd seen the uptick in targets going his way. I feel like Perine walks into that role to catch those passes. And so I think we can get Perine to like 4 catches, 40 yards, receiving, maybe chips in like 30, 40 rushing yards, and now I've got a reasonable fantasy day from Piran. Now, what do you think? You guys are obviously plugged into this very closely.
Well, the Kareem Hunt part is what's interesting. You know, he got signed to the practice squad. Andy didn't rule him out for Sunday. I'm kind of skeptical that that's going to actually happen. And so, you know, some people are, you know, I saw in guillotine formats or even in just regular leagues went out and bid on Kareem Hunt as well. That's the tricky one. Like in 3 weeks from now, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is eligible to come back from the NFI list. We'll see if he comes back. So it's so crowded. I don't know. I know you said, yeah, don't wait and see, but I'm just staying away from the entire Chiefs backfield.
Yeah, that's a safe thing to do. And, you know, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is, I think, also, you know, if he does come back in, is it 3 weeks or two? Aren't we down to 2 weeks now for him? That would be another complicating factor here. And it's why I didn't bid on Piran or Steele in any of my leagues. I'm just like, you know what? I'm not. This thing looks ugly. I think I'm just going to avoid.
How about the game?
But I would start Piran this week. In a pinch, I'd start Piran. I think he's the safe play this particular week, just knowing all the things we don't know, but that's my angle.
I'm with you if you are, but it has to be a PPR format. If it's not PPR, then don't waste
your
time.
That's right.
Tonight, look, Agreed. It's the heavy hitter of fantasy running backs. Essentially, Breece Hall has been one of the best fantasy running backs out there in every game he's played since he's become a starter. But Ramondre Stevenson is the Toyota Corolla, in my opinion, of fantasy running backs. He's the most reliable man on the field. Is that going to happen again tonight against the Jets?
He's been great, and nobody's noticing because, you know, basically all offseason, we decided that the Patriots were a garbage team. And since then, they've had an upset win, and then they lost in overtime. Some Stevenson metrics that I want to hand you guys, and this is for the stat junkies, but I know you love this. Among starting running backs, Ramondre Stevenson, sixth in yards after contact, almost 4 yards after contact. He's fourth in runs of 10 or more yards. He's had six of them already. He's number one in forced missed tackles, Ramondre Stevenson. And speaking of missed tackles, the Jets, tonight's opponent, have the second most missed tackles allowed. They've given up 19 missed tackles already. And the Jets have an awesome pass defense led by Sauce Gardner. The path of least resistance is on the ground with Ramondre Stevenson. Big game coming against the Jets. Week one, Jordan Mason ran for 147 yards. And then week two, the lackluster stylings of Tony Pollard were enough to give him 102 total yards. So, yeah, I really like Ramondre Stevenson tonight. And for bettors, and you're a betting state. Well, half your state's betting, right? You got half your listening audience are bettors.
That's right.
64.5 yards over Ramondre Stevenson.
All right, well, we got to run and go track down the crocodile here and see if we can't work our way out west to get him. But we appreciate the time, Charge.
I want to see those two reunited so that they can have the loving relationship that they had had prior to Carson Steele coming to Kansas City.
There you go. That's Paul Charchian of GuillotineLeagues.com.
There you go. Thanks, Charge. He's presented by Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views.
He's worried about
Rocky J.
Carson Steele. We talked to him about it. He said that it's still living back at his parents. There's some transporting of animals.
Licenses. He needs licenses.
Over state lines. I have been told, seriously, though, that Missouri is pretty loose. You can own a lot of different animals here.
Remember,
in the
we
state
tried to get a peacock in studio, and we ran into worrying
PETA
about certain. PETA screwed it up. Remember, with the last year, the peacock controversy of the television stuff, but then we also said, hey, people are upset about peacock. Let's get a peacock in the studio. We contacted a
peafowl farm.
Peafowl. We learned how expensive some of these are. And they were willing to bring it in, but they were worried that PETA was going to get upset. So PETA, like most things, screwed it up.
Earlier this week, I was at Target, and I kid you not, there was a stroller. I saw a capuchin monkey in Target.
Capuchin out here? The Target right over here?
No. And up in Legends in Kansas.
There was a
black capuchin monkey in Target.
Okay.
Bring a monkey into Target.
No, you can't.
Was it like a service animal? Did it get stuff off the shelves for him? He was in a stroller. That makes me think.
I'm just picturing this monkey.
It was in a stroller that was caged.
In a stroller, reaching up, grabbing the can of beans off the shelf.
There's no way that it was able to get out of its situation. I'm dead serious. There was a monkey in Target in Legends.
The best part of all of this was the names of them, remember? Don't you remember all the great names of all the different peacocks we learned?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. I almost got us in trouble. Yeah.
I mean, look, some of the names are Midnight Black and...
Wasn't there
some names.
I mean,
there are some names.
Wasn't there one that said, well, I don't want to.
You better be sure before you start throwing it out.
No,
there.
But you know, yeah, I know that's why. If I'm reading it, I can say it. I think because I'm reading a name of an animal. Yeah, I'm correct. Reading a name of an animal, but I got to remember the name of the peacock farm, whatever.
Oh, it's legs peafowl.
Peafowl.
Legspeafowl.com. That's the one.
Mm.
That's right. I reckon. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You recognize the website now. We were unable to secure the,
unfortunately,
the peafowl at that time. While you look that up, let's get started with all 32, and I'll go first while you look up the name. I don't want you to get lost in that because that is a very important thing you were searching for. So I'm going to talk about kicking. Earlier today, we played a clip from Mel Kiper. We can get back to that at 1:30. That said, you know, you should get rid of too high and all this stuff for the betterment of the game. Let me talk about the things that actually would make the game better. They have to shrink the uprights. And I mean this genuinely because a 40-yard field goal, when they first had these upright sizes, used to be a difficult kick in the league. League-wide, 50-plus yard field goals this season are being made at an 80% clip. When you're making 80% of all 50-yard field goals, well, then the kicking has surpassed the technology that we're working with. So the very simple solution is one of two things. Either raise the crossbar so that you have to have more distance on it in order for it to be good, or shrink the uprights, making the target zone a little bit smaller. I think I would shrink the uprights, but I honestly think over the next 5 years, the league is going to have to look into this. You could not, I think in a way, it's a disservice to the league if from the 50-yard line every single game 5 years from now, everyone can make a kick 50% of the time. It's kind of nuts. The rate right now has gotten really high. You got some of the good ones?
Well, I was just in regards to... No, I couldn't find them. In regards to your point there, this is why we, even in fantasy football, we changed one of our league scoring for kickers because you're right. 50-yarders are not what they were 10 years ago. Do I think they need to change the goalposts? No, we don't need to go arena football league here and make these narrow, et cetera. Like, we don't need to do that. It's what's expected from kickers now, that you can make 55-yarders. Dave Tobe was talking today, as you mentioned, like, Butker can make a 68-yarder. His range, I think they said 72 or 74 is kind of all the way out to 72 or 74 yards if they had to in a perfect prime condition, which, by the way, is what they're going to be in on Sunday night in Atlanta if they need one right before halftime. How about that? A 72-yarder down at the Mercedes Dome or whatever it's called these days.
I think that they've got to shorten it. It's just too, it's gotten too easy, hasn't it? Like, it's just different. When they created those rules, people couldn't make the kind of kicks that they could make. It seems kind of, I don't know. I guess they like points, and this just guarantees points, so maybe that's why they don't care. I will say, it's going to change. If people keep hitting at this rate, Gold, it is going to dramatically change end of game, tie game situations. And these teams with a chance to go up two scores instead of one should really be paying attention to it, because a lot more game tying field goals if literally every kicker in the league can make it from 55.
Yeah, by the way, you can buy a purple black shoulder cock for $450 from legspeafowl.com. Hmm. Anyway, Drew, what do you got?
That sounds uncomfortable.
Okay, I have CJ Stroud. I don't know if you guys caught this on Sunday Night Football. After the game, he was going up to talk to Caleb Williams, and he said, "Hey, good job out there, and to stop taking these hits." Caleb Williams, it looked like he was like, "All right, good, I'm out of here. Don't talk to him anymore." But then CJ brought him back in, like he pulled him back in. And they were talking for a little bit after the game. CJ Stroud said he wasn't trying to little bro Caleb Williams. I guess
I didn't take it that way at all. I was surprised that ended up being a national reaction to that.
To me, if you didn't see what he was saying, you saw it, and I was like, yeah, he might have just said, hey, congrats, and keep going. But him explaining it, CJ Stroud, he's trying to help Caleb out more than anything, because I think Caleb Williams, his entire life, has probably been able to just put on the helmet, the pads, and be able to go and do his thing and not have any sort of a problem, where, as we've seen through two games, it's not that easy. And he's going to have some, you know, some bumps and bruises that he's going to have to go through, and it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the rookie year pans out, because obviously the numbers aren't there necessarily, but he's making decisions that he made in college at USC that actually ended up working out. They're not, and they're resulting in picks that are double coverage and everything like that. So it's going to take some time for him.
I think he just did what a lot of quarterbacks do. CJ Stroud, years don't matter in the league. Have you established yourself as one of the people to watch at that position? CJ Stroud has. Him giving Caleb Williams advice, not little brothering him, it's him,
right,
an established 100%. NFL successful starting quarterback saying, dude, you're going to be good. Peyton Manning would have done the same thing to a younger quarterback. So would Patrick Mahomes. I was surprised to find out that that was the reaction. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, what where's the line? Is it, you know, someone saying, hey, well, he was just a rookie last year. What's the line? You got to be in the league for four. You got to be in the league four years, Drew. You know, I'm with you. Like, you got to be in the league 4 years till you can actually give advice to a player. What? Or is it, wait, it's got to be a year and a half. It's got to be 3 years. What are we doing?
As far as I know, I don't know if Caleb Williams was asked about it either afterwards, but look, I think any rookie would be taking advice, and it doesn't matter how CJ Stroud's proved that he's good enough, to your point, Cody, to be able to give advice. It's not like Zach Wilson's out there giving advice to somebody on how to play quarterback.
Yeah.
Or Bryce Young, whatever.
Lastly, on all 32, I'll take us to the head coaching conversation in the NFL. We earlier we were talking about quarterbacks getting benched and who the next one is.
Sure.
Look at the coaching carousel that we know is going to happen at some point. Every year, there's like four, five, six coaches that get fired.
Correct.
And right now, the number one guy on the list, of course, is Brian Daboll up in New York. What's going on there? He knows it. I think that if this thing doesn't turn around in a hurry, and he doesn't have the quarterback to do it, I think, then he's probably going to get fired. The question will be, do you think we see a coach get fired in season? I was trying to look back, and how many consecutive years have we seen that happen? Last year, Frank Reich got fired very early on in the year. That was kind of a unique circumstance with him and the owner. But the surprising name that I actually think is in jeopardy, despite making the playoffs a couple years ago, Doug Peterson. And by the way, Daboll made the playoffs a couple years ago, too. But Doug Peterson.
I think he's at risk.
He's got...
They're 0-2, and they've got the golden boy.
Yeah, they just paid a quarterback. They're now in a division where the Texans have surpassed them because of CJ Stroud.
Correct.
The Colts, I know they're 0-2. We talked about this the other day. But the Colts seem like they're headed maybe in the right direction. The Jags are in trouble. And Doug Peterson has the second best odds right now to be fired. Daboll... 250, Peterson 4-1, Mike McCarthy 6-1. Mike McCarthy's not getting fired in season, guys. Jerry Jones doesn't do that.
We could set a damn record for head coaching vacancies because just depending on if it goes south for everyone. Because I'll tell you right now, Eberflus at risk, Sirianni's at risk. If the Bengals miss the postseason, Zach Taylor's at risk. All of those guys are guys I expect to have their job at the end of the 2024 season. But if it went south in a hurry, Gold, any of those guys could be fired, including and Robert Saleh. Any of those guys could be fired
Sirianni
by
is,
the end of the season.
Nick Sirianni,
at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you might be surprised. Nick Sirianni is only 20. This was 22. This was before the Monday night. This was September 16th, so that would have been...
After they'd started the season 1-0 after the Brazil game?
That would have been Monday before the Monday night game and the embarrassment. He was 22-1 to get fired. My guess is those odds have shifted closer to 10-1 for Sirianni after that performance against the Eagles.
When he doesn't get along with his quarterback, Falcons. It's just a mess. Again, the Zach Taylor thing is if he doesn't make the postseason.
Jags schedule.
It's a healthy Burrow.
For Jags and Doug Peterson, they got the Bills coming up on Monday night, then the Texans, then the Colts, then the Bears, and the Patriots. That's the next couple games for Doug Peterson. That's all 32 in the NFL. Up next, we'll get to what's trending and Cody gave you a suggestion for changing the NFL. I don't like it, but it's not nearly as bad as one we got earlier today from a national pundit. We'll get to that next.
What's trending?
Number one on what's trending, the Royals have lost four in a row. They're off today. Might be a good thing with the way they're playing right now. Take a deep breath, take a break before the Giants come to town. Kansas City still occupies a wild card spot. That'd be the second wild card spot as things stand today. Although, as we were discussing, the Orioles...
I think they're up 3-2 now. They're in a game right now.
What's the latest in that game? They are playing today. While the Royals are 2 in their last 10 games.
Orioles are up 3-2 in the 6th.
Okay. Royals are 4 out of their last 10. Orioles are 2 out of their last 10. So it gives you an idea of just how bad things are for them. The Royals currently... sitting at 82-71 on the season.
If the Orioles end up losing this game today, they'll be just as close to the top wild card spot where you get the potential of 3 home games in the wild card round as they are to being out of the playoffs entirely, something they were obviously trying to avoid. Have they just avoided the sweep? I think we walk in today and be like, cool, everything's fine. Now, off day, take a breather, try to get that win this weekend, obviously, against that same Giants team who's playing the Orioles right now. Next up on Watch Trending, Steve Sarkisian giving an update on his starting quarterback situation. We know Quinn Ewers has been hurt for the number one team in college football, the Texas Longhorns, right now. Sark says it'll actually be Arch Manning getting his first career collegiate start against UL Monroe this Saturday for Texas.
Why push it? 65-yard
run. It was weird seeing a Manning run.
Yeah, no kidding.
Those were non-mobile quarterbacks in my lifetime.
Makes sense. You're playing that opponent. Why push Quinn Ewers anyway? Plus your backup's Arch Manning. So Archie, yeah, I mean, it's not a problem.
I think it's fine. But it's still a big deal. Arch Manning was the number one recruit coming out of high school, and now he's going to get a chance to start for the number one team in the country for a week.
Next up on What's Trending Thursday Night Football tonight, Patriots and the Jets. This one is up in the Meadowlands, home opener for Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. They are 6-point favorites. Chance for them to get to 2-1 after losing week one to the 49ers. All of a sudden, they're 2-1. We're going to talk more about this in a little bit, but they're the only hope if you're looking at a competition in that AFC East. It's not going to come from the Dolphins. It's not going to come from the Patriots, I don't believe. So it's the Jets and the Bills. And if the Bills see a Jets team that's sitting at 1-2 out of the gate with losses to the Patriots, that's going to be awfully hard to convince me that the Bills are going to be tested in that division.
I'll give the Patriots credit. They've been saltier than I thought, but yeah, they're not winning the division. Next up on What's Trending, news around the NFL on the injury front. T. Higgins did practice with Cincinnati for the second straight day. Most reporting says he's on track to make his season debut Monday night against the Washington Commanders. And Jordan Love was in practice with a helmet for the second straight day. Still questionable for the game coming up on Sunday. I don't know why you'd push it with Jordan Love. You got the save it so you're not completely buried win with Malik Willis behind at quarterback. I thought, screw it, at least you got to 1-1. I don't think I'd rush Jordan Love back if I were the Packers, but originally the timeline said 4 weeks and he can play this week.
Other injuries in the NFL, A.J. Brown not at practice as of now, dealing with a hamstring injury. Remember, he missed Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
And then wide receiver Johnny Wilson is there at Eagles practice, but not a full participant. So the Eagles could be down a couple wide receivers again for a second straight week. We know they just lost to the Falcons on Monday Night Football. That is What's Trending here on Cody and Gold. We'll talk more Patriots and Jets here before we wrap things up for the day. But you brought up your take there at All 32 about you wanted to change the goalposts. Not a huge fan.
Maybe make the kicking football less easy to kick, like less distance on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm more take open to that. Maybe more open to that than what Mel Kiper suggested earlier today, now that teams are struggling seeing these two high safety looks.
Hit the receiver in stride, 65-yard touchdown. It's a beautiful thing to watch. That's what I want to see brought back to the National Football League. Okay, check down kings, bubble screen sensations, boring football. Game manager, I get it, but I want to see those deep shots. That's what the NFL was built on. I grew up with John Unitas, Fran Tarkington, Ken Stabler, Daryl LaMonica. You know, you talk about quarterbacks, Joe Namath. It was just right. Brett Favre when he was doing what he did. Burke Jones with the Baltimore Colts. You think about those quarterbacks who would throw the ball down the field. I'd say what Bradshaw did was Stallworth and Swan, Roger Staubach. That's what I want to see brought back. I say, well, you can't do that, right? Well, you got a 5-yard rule.
Get
with
to the point. Mel.
Quarterbacks, right? The Mel Blount rule, right? Now with the push thing with Hurts, you got to be a yard back now. So don't tell me you can't have those safeties closer to the line of scrimmage than they are. I was at games where I'm thinking, hey, too high? They're out in outer space. Two, I couldn't even find us. And they're playing with 9 guys, right? Where are the other two? Oh, the other two, they're so daggone far back, and even though they're part of damn play. I'm telling you, we got to change this thing, and we got to have, hey, you can warn them. Enough for, hey, come on. Hey, guys, you got to get up a little bit, right? You're too far back. Warn those safeties. But you got to figure out, competition committee, somebody, Dano, somebody's got to figure out what that depth is, but it's too far back right now. The NFL is being ruined by these too high safeties.
No, it's not. Relax. This is other teams in the league now.
I think they want to compare it to like Major League Baseball shift, and these do not feel on the same planet.
No, other teams in the league have been doing this. It's just now more teams are facing it. You know, we've been talking about that for 2 years here in Kansas City in terms of the challenge of it. It is it's a challenge. You have to adjust to it. And maybe the better quarterbacks are going to stand out even more when that happens. But the fact that we're suggesting we should change a type of defense that you can run in the NFL
like Richard
is insane. And then Mel Kiper listed off 12 guys to start the conversation.
I made sure to include that for you guys.
Yeah, it's nuts. Richard over on YouTube is like, what does Kiper want next? Pass rushers to have to count to three.
That's
Mississippi.
Right. That's right.
If you're counting to three and it's football, we all know that's to Mississippi. One Mississippi, two Mississippi.
As Danon said.
What's funny is, before, and then I'll let you get that, Andrew.
Sorry.
The point on the Mississippi is actually what's accurate. The problem in the league is not the too high safety. The problem in the league is that over the last 4 years, sacks are way up. Offensive holding penalties are way up. Offensive line play is down. And guess what you can't do when offensive line play is down? Throw the ball deep. It is way more about that than it is about a two. But what do you think? This is the first time someone's called too high safety? No, they just don't have the protection for it anymore, so they can't push it down the field. It's insane to call a rule just to get one less person downfield. It's so stupid. Teams would so intentionally take advantage of that. They know you could only have one safety, or they had to be close to the line. It just fundamentally changes the entire game. No, I just think it's an ebb and flow thing. Offensive line play is down right now, so nobody can get the ball out.
Well, and Danen brought it up too. Why would you safety or the defense already can't tackle in certain places? The defense would be set back even furthermore. Where I think that there is a strategic outlook of this: of hey, Patrick Mahomes is that good of a quarterback. We need to come up with a strategy to try to limit his ability to throw those bombs like he did to Tyreek Hill all that time. Mel goes all the way back to like the 70s and 80s naming guys, where he didn't have to go that far back to name guys who were able to chuck the ball down the field properly, even against the two high safeties. You're making defense almost impossible, I think, if you do that at that point, where you're not. And I know that the points are the big thing, but defensively, what are you supposed to do in terms of coaching? Like, how am I? It's almost a, I guess, who can
make no mistakes?
Who cannot allow 30 points, essentially, is what it's going to end up being. Instead of, let's try to limit the team to under 20, it's just try to not let them get to 30.
Also, changing the most popular sport in the country is unnecessary.
Well, let's not act like they've made changes. It's not even that. They've made changes.
That's a significant change, though.
Like, they've made changes to the NFL plenty of times, and most of those changes have been to favor the quarterback, favor offenses. So we don't need more rule changes like this just because we're currently in a year span, heck, technically 2 weeks, really, if we're being honest, of all of a sudden it's becoming more of a problem for offenses. Let's make some adjustments as a coach, as a player, before we change the entire rules of the league. This is just kind of a bad take on Mel Kiper's part. We all know the NFL, we love scoring, whether fantasy football, otherwise, we like points. Like, it's exciting, no question. But they've already made plenty of changes that allow for that to continue.
And the text line says, hey, is offensive line play down or is defensive line play just back up? I think you could make an argument for either. The truth is, like most things, it's probably a little bit of both, because there are some elite pass rushers. 5 years ago, there's only one guy who had more than 15 sacks. Last year, there were five, I think. Like, I mean, including Trey Hendrickson, the guy who kicked ass yesterday. Aiden Hutchinson already has 5.5 sacks 2 weeks into this thing. So truth is, probably a little bit of both is the answer. But it also, you know, that comes and goes with time. Now that offensive line play is down, guess what people will spend more time working on? Developing that. The other part of the problem is it hasn't been as good in college. This goes back to the same things and dumbing things down and a million other things. Last year, by the way, there were five guys. TJ Watt, Trey Hendrickson, Josh Allen, Khalil Mack, and Danielle Hunter all had 16.5 or more sacks. So either offensive line plays down or defensive linemen have gotten way damn better. But either way, the problem is the same. It's hard to get the ball downfield. The game changes. I don't think it's boring to watch guys get 9 yards at a time. It's honestly, in fairness, maybe more action. I guess I don't get the 60-yard touchdown quite as often, but I still get plenty of in-game action.
Well, man, you are in for a treat tonight on Thursday Night Football.
Get the hell out of here.
Jacoby Brissett, Aaron Rodgers.
I'll bet you $5 right now there's not a single 60-yard touchdown in this game.
I would agree.
I'll bet you $200.
Check down city. These two quarterbacks have been checking it down more than any of the other two. Or I think two of the most in the top.
Not named Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, I think they're the two of the bottom five in terms of check down percentage in football this season. And Ramondre Stevenson and Breece Hall and Braylon Allen, we're just going to see a lot of run. I'll be stunned. You said over 60 yards. Unless it's a screen pass, I don't believe we'll see a 25-plus yard reception tonight.
I think it's more likely Breece Hall has a 60-yard rushing touchdown than a 60-yard passing touchdown.
Well, I think Kiper should like this then, because he's going back to the 60s with Johnny Unitas in the 70s when Earl Campbell was playing and running for 1,500 yards, 1,600 yards.
Dude, he was literally mentioning dudes from like an era where the forward pass might not have even existed. Shouldn't he have listed like some more modern era quarterbacks?
He wanted to make sure we knew he
can name a bunch of quarterbacks, and he listed 12 of them. I guess 10 quarterbacks and two receivers, he mentioned. The total for the game, 38 tonight. It is going to be a low score. It's early enough in the season. I know you and I have always joked about the Thursday night games. You won't watch a lot of these. It's early enough in the season where, like, it's not like the Patriots are 3-10, and it's a 3-10 versus, you know, 4-9 team. The Jets just won. The Patriots have been competitive. I actually think it'll be a very close game tonight, and there's no Royals game tonight either, so I'm definitely watching.
You're definitely in. Okay,
I'm solo tonight. My wife's got a work dinner.
Oh wow!
So I'm on like dinner duty and all the normal stuff, and I cook dinner sometimes anyway. It doesn't really matter.
See if the kids want to go to someone else's house. You know, you can just have some alone time.
Wow, just
just watch football.
Because my wife works from home, I will. So when I leave the show. When I get home, I'll have about an hour before they get off the bus. One entire hour in the house completely by myself. I'll probably just sit there, stare blankly at nothing. Oh, you, dude, my house
terrible.
No, it doesn't. My house is so loud all the time.
You just want the quiet. Why I said you had to take a nap.
You're just going to play like some meditation music just relax.
Yeah, the idea that like nothing would happen for an hour, that sounds delightful.
I can understand.
You don't know what that's like.
I can understand that. That makes sense. I just didn't know. How often do you get an afternoon nap?
Never.
There you go.
I would assume that you're not watching the game. I mean, I know that
it depends. I mean, like, so for me on the Thursday night games, if they're a bad one, I might watch it if I don't have other things going on. My daughter has dance tonight, so it'll just be me and for a couple of hours. It'll only just be me and my son. So, depending on what he wants to do, we might read a little. You know, it just kind of depends on how the activity goes. It's possible it'll end up on the TV.
True Scooby-Doo tonight for you or Thursday night football?
Probably Thursday night football. I'm going to watch some college as well. We got
who's playing
a
college
Sunbelt
tonight?
Matchup. South Allen, App State.
Oh, jeez.
The vibe might be better in Boone than in Foxborough.
I don't know.
Potentially.
I don't know about that. It's a home opener for... It's not in Foxborough, right? It's in New York.
I think it's
opener for the Jets in Meadowlands.
Oh, even more exciting.
Jets fans still think they're winning the Super Bowl. It's that you can enjoy that hope that still exists.
Hey, they're not 0-2, so there's technically a chance.
Hey, at least their quarterback made it more than four snaps, you know?
He has.
He doesn't look good yet, but a lot of that comes down to... Again, I still think the story of the NFL through 2 weeks is... Takes a while to come back from being hurt as a quarterback. More time than anyone wanted to give credit to for Burrow, Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers. It's just like every quarterback was coming off a major injury, seemingly, and they're all playing poorly to start the year.
And him and Kirk, I mean, not only are they injuries, it's an Achilles injury, and they're older. So,
sure.
I mean, Aaron is if Kirk Cousins has been hit a little bit, I don't know if Aaron Rodgers has been hit very much, where if he sees somebody coming at him, he's just throwing throwing the ball and
still,
to get rid of it. He's just getting rid of it.
I mean, Rodgers looks a little bit ahead, and he is, based off of recovery timeline anyway, looks a little ahead of Kirk Cousins in terms of that, but neither one, I mean, Kirk Cousins has had one good drive this season. Aaron Rodgers, they've had such a good running game.
He hasn't even had to be good.
That's why I just don't think they're really putting the ball down the field.
No, but if the Jets are going to be a playoff team like you predicted, and like a lot of people thought last year, and then certainly some less people, but some people thought this year, well, then this is the same thing that goes with Cincinnati. You're 1-1. You got to take care of business at home against the Patriots, a team they have not beaten since Eric Decker at home. They haven't beaten at home since Eric Decker was still on the damn team. Mm. I understand that they had their thumb firmly on top of you the entire time Tom Brady existed. But damn, he's been gone from the Patriots for 4 years. You got to find some way to beat a division team in
trying to say that, use the thumb reference there, Vinny's a Jets fan. Are you trying to say the symbolism that it took the broken thumb to get a Jets win over the Patriots? Is that what you're trying to say?
Those were unrelated. I was not trying to make a thumb reference just because Vinny Pasquantino has a broken thumb. I was just simply stating that you've got to be able to take care of business against the Patriots.
Just making sure you weren't. I was like, that's messed up, man.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that to our guy Vinny. I would never do that to our guy Vinny.
Not that I need you to feel better or feel sorry for the Bengals, but if the Patriots...
Yeah, don't worry.
If the Patriots go 9-8 or 10-7, will you retract the bad loss in week one statement?
If the Patriots do what now?
If they go 10-7 or 9-8. If they have a winning record.
They're not winning 10 games this year.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
Yeah. At that point, I said, wow, you know what?
Not seven games, because last year you tried to tell me the Raiders' loss was a bad loss, and they won seven games. And it was a bad loss. I don't disagree with that assessment. It was a terrible loss last year. Seven-win teams, I mean, there's 17 games. You can't get to seven. Well, you really stink.
And this is the thing. Even if they did go 9-8, I would still say that loss to the Patriots was a bad loss as well. So I...
They just need to win their next two games.
I'm trying to get
out of here. They got to wash the slate clean for themselves and win Washington and the Panthers. Is that how they got the next two games?
Yep.
Andy Dalton, man. They face him in 2 weeks.
They lose
either
of those two games.
Dial up the old Survivor League picks next 2 weeks with Cincy. Could knock more people out. They already screwed people in week one.
So you're saying that you want people to pick the Bengals so
no,
that they can
I did not
to,
pick, no, he pick. I did not pick Cincy week one, and okay. It was a great thing. This week, I can tell you, I'm considering multiple teams, obviously. I'm considering Cincy as one Survivor entry. I consider the Jets, but I don't think I'm going to do it. I thought about the Jets tonight.
Got scared.
Thought about the Raiders against Carolina. Andy Dalton scares me a little bit, but those are the teams that I've... My question is, do I believe...
Charles probably touched out of you. Threw 340 yards the other time he started last year.
I believe in the Jets tonight enough to put them in that slot instead of using the Raiders against Carolina? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I do. Because there's nothing that I would enjoy more than somehow the Patriots going to the Meadowlands and spoiling this home opener
for Aaron Rodgers
for the Jets. That would be pretty enjoyable. I don't think that's going to happen, though.
We'll see.
But that would be pretty funny.
I think the Jets will win.
Jacoby Brissett goes on the road to Cincy, beats Joe Burrow, goes on the road, beats Aaron Rodgers. Oh, it'd be so good. It'd be so good.
It's a fun NFL storyline, that's for sure.
It would. All right, we're back at it tomorrow, guys. It'll be a Red Friday on the show. We'll have our new Chiefs contributor, Josh Briscoe, join us from ChiefsOnSI.com. We'll start our weekly conversations with him. And I think we're going to check in with our now Atlanta Falcons contributor.
Insider, you know? Mm-hmm. Our Atlanta Falcons insider.
Aaron Ladd, Mr. Atlanta, is going to join us tomorrow on the show as well. Hope you guys have a good rest of the day. The Drive is up next.